It is a fantastic privilege to have one of the most famous, celebrated, distinguished names in British sport with us today. And such a brave man is fearless about everything, but this is a big moment because he's going to be interrogated by five Wellington pupils, and we're going to be introducing them as we go through it. But I thought at the beginning of the podcast, Clive, can you just, this is a challenge, in 3 minutes, give us the highlights, the Clive Woodward journey.
Thank you, Anthony. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Just go back to my CV, I guess. I think to start with, I went to Loughborough University, did a degree in sports science for 3 years. I did a year teacher training, so I'm a fully qualified teacher. So I had 4 years at Loughborough. After Loughborough, I worked at in rugby as an amateur game then. So I had then 8 years working for Rank Xerox, including five in Australia, where I was a sales director based out of Sydney. And when we came back from Australia, we set up my own small leasing and finance company. It was around for 8 years. So I had 16 years in business before becoming then the first full-time professional rugby coach of the rugby team. So I coached England for 8 years, culminated winning the World Cup in 2003, which is probably what I'm best known for. Then when I left the Olympic family, I had a year in professional football. I was director of football at Southampton Football Club. Then I got this wonderful job with Team GB, where I was I was director of sport for three Olympic Games, for Beijing 2008, for Vancouver 2010, and obviously London 2012. Then after 2012, and I've been doing that since, I'm now the director of sport of a ski academy in Tignes, the south of France. When I say it's a ski academy, it's a bit like having Wellington in the mountains. It's a full-time school. So it's a full-time school. We've put a huge stall on education as well as being great skiers. But we're really proud of that because we've grown it from nothing. We've now got over 200 pupils there from 12 to 18. You've got to be a great skier to get in. But most importantly, we've got 26 nationalities. And equally importantly, it's roughly 50-50 boys, girls. We're very, very keen to keep the male, female split equally. So that's kind of my kind of back background, all kind of based on sport. But I think quite significant was my 16 years in business, because I've learned a lot of leadership skills through the business. Then I applied them to sport. And I guess that's me.
And that was brilliant, Clive. That was 3 minutes to the absolute to the second. And on that career, you have not talked about yourself as a player and how important was playing sport to you, and did it go where could that have gone further?
Yeah, I think my sport was I didn't play rugby till I was 14. In fact, to be quite clear, my first was introduced to rugby, didn't quite like it. I was quite small, got bashed around quite a bit. I was a football player, I loved playing football. So I think also from a rugby point of view, I think if you're a good footballer, the skills help being a good rugby player. But history says I went on to kind of focus on rugby, went on to play for England, played 21 times for England, went on two British Lions tours. So I got to the top of my game, but it was amateur sport. And my big kind of, it's not nothing to do with me, but my regret was I'd love to be a professional sportsman. You know, because the game was amateur. When I say amateur, it was seriously amateur. You didn't get paid to play. So I'd play for England at Twickenham on a Saturday afternoon against Wales. There'd be 75,000 people watching live on BBC. A very famous commentator called Bill McLaren would be commentating. But Monday morning, I'm in the Rank Xerox sales office giving my forecasting about how many photocopies I'm going to sell that week. So it's a generally amateur game. So it was hard to explain looking back now. That's what we did. We did it for fun. And there's a lot of strengths for being an amateur game, because I'd play for England, but I'd be playing next to a scaffolder, a bricklayer, a lawyer, accountant. We all came from different backgrounds, but it was an amateur game. But it was still huge, huge TV audiences, and we were pretty, pretty well-known people, but we didn't get paid to play. But that was the kind of background to it, which is hard to imagine. But I'd love to be a professional rugby player for that short period of your life where you can give it everything, especially getting yourself in physical shape. I never had that opportunity, but I became the first full-time professional rugby coach. So I was the first professional coach, but I didn't play rugby apart from being an amateur player.
Is it as good, Clive, watching professional rugby as it was amateur for the spectator?
I think so. I think if you love rugby, I think watching a rugby, I think rugby's got a lot it can improve in terms of the way it comes across as a spectator sport. But I think people love especially international rugby. There's nothing better than going to Twickenham, watching Twickenham playing, you know, the All Blacks or Wales. I think it's that's the big thing. So it's the game itself.
And your own highlights. You won't like this question, maybe, but I'm going to ask you to pick out genuinely three highlights of your life. When you look back as an old man, what would you look back as three real moments of your life?
Well, obviously, winning the World Cup was pretty special. I mean, that's okay. I mean, these guys weren't even born then, but at the time it was.
Did you always? How confident? Well, we're going to come on to that. Sam's going to ask questions about that. So we'll go. Well, that's one.
2003 as a rugby coach, it doesn't get bigger than that to win a World Cup, which England never done before. In fact, no Northern Hemisphere team's ever done before, never done since. So that was pretty special, and I was lucky enough to be in charge of a pretty amazing group of players. So winning the World Cup would be obviously right up there.
Two more to go.
I think getting picked for England was huge as an amateur
player.
Tell
us about that.
Well, my first four caps, we won a Grand Slam. In those days...
Tell us about it. How did you hear about it?
I heard about it on the radio. Literally
really?
Driving along, working for Rank Xerox. Yeah, it was an amateur game, Anthony. Yeah. It really was amateur. So I heard about it, my first cap. I played 21 times for England, which today isn't many, but in those days it was a lot.
Yeah.
Because we only played like four or five games a year. So I've played for England for about 5 years. So playing for England was priceless, you know, to go and run out of Twickenham, playing for England, you know, 75,000
people. Particular match of those 21, Clive, that stands in out in
yeah,
the
Yeah, my first five games, we won a Grand Slam, which means we won every single game. So out of my CV, my first five was played 5-1-5.
Who do you most want to beat?
We beat Scotland up in Scotland, which was magic. And I set up a few tries up there. So the Grand Slam was won in Scotland. That was still my most memorable game as a player because there was a lot at stake that day, you know, because we're playing in Murrayfield. Trying to win a Grand Slam is not easy, especially when you play away from home. And whether you like it or not, the Scots aren't too favourable to England when it comes to rugby. So to win up there was fantastic. And we had a great team. So I was really proud.
And the great moment of that match, which some will remember?
I set up a couple of tries, so I remember doing a bit of a run and put John Carlton under the post, which won us the game.
And
which I still remember clearly, as you can tell.
We can. It's so modest. And the third one?
Well, that was three, wasn't it?
No, we're going for 2003. We're going for as a player, just something else in your life.
From a rugby point of view?
No, in the Clive Woodward general view.
I think what we're doing now in this, I'm the director of sport of the Ski Academy. We just had this young French kid called Flavio Vitali. He joined us when he was 12. He's now 18. He just won the world championship. So we've taken him. He's the best in the world. And he will potentially go on and win a gold medal at the Olympic Games. To see him come from a 12-year-old where he spoke no English, had really... parents, his mum was Russian, his dad was French. This kid's been amazing, not only just his skiing wise, but academically. We've got him into the London School of Economics to do an online course when he finishes at Apex. So to see him do so well from start to finish has been something I'm really proud of.
And we talked about this when back in 2013-14, we spoke about your setting up of team, about... What do celebrated sports people do after they leave? And we're recording this shortly after the tragic news of yet another cricketer who appears to have taken their life. How can one nourish people so that they aspire and reach the top, but then have another life? What is it about you that's given yourself renewal after a player, after a coach? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's the strength of the amateur game, if you call it amateur game. You know, say I played for England at the very top level. I was working for Xerox, so I've always had this career. So, as we all know, in most sports, you're one injury away from not being able to play anymore. You get badly hurt. And I think what happens when that happens and you stop your sport for whatever reason, whether it's you're too old to do it anymore, you're not good enough anymore, or you get injured. To have something, what am I going to do now? It should be really planned for you straight, immediately. So I'd say now one of the big strengths of what we do at the academy is to really work with the athletes about what are you going to do next? What are you going to do after skiing? And it's so straightforward. Like I said, I mentioned Flavio. He's going to do a degree at London School of Economics. Yeah. He'll still be skiing for France, but he'll be able to do it online. 90% will be done online. He'll come to London just for a few weeks a year to do the face-to-face stuff. But he knows exactly what he, so if he gets injured, he knows what he's going into. And I'd say to any athlete, any professional athlete, you've got to be thinking about the future all the time. Yeah. And I think from an education point of view, Anthony is so keen. We actually make sure that is possible now. And with the online education, that is clearly possible for most athletes.
Well, you've got the heart for that, Clive, but not every professional club in every sport does have. And a lot of young people, still young people, can find 6 decades of life ahead with no clear path to follow. I want to just ask you before handing over to the students presenting. How much do you enjoy that?
The presenting?
Presenting and commenting.
Yeah, no, I do enjoy it. It keeps you close to the game because I've coached England for what it was eight years. Had a bit of a fallout with the people at Twickenham for various reasons. So then went into professional football. Yeah. So I've been able to stay close to rugby by, you know, not only commentating but also writing for the new news as well.
How aware are you of not being critical of your successes when you are commenting? If you feel it, and have you had any really quite awkward moments on air?
I've had no, because as long as you're saying on air exactly what you feel, I think just it's the opposite. You've got to be brutally honest if that's what you feel, and you're just playing to everybody. I mean, I remember when I was coaching England, I used to read stuff about myself in the paper and be thinking, crikey, that's a bit harsh. But then thinking, okay, if I was a journalist, would I be writing the same thing? Yes. Come on, you're there to do it. So I think if you're going to take high-profile jobs in coaching or a player, you've got to expect you're going to get good press. And when you do well, that goes way over the top. And when you do badly, you comp it big time.
It's not a lot of fun.
It's not a lot of fun, no. You get a lot of positive feedback from the media, put it that way.
Let's come on to Otty. And Otty, do you just want to just begin by just outlining your own sporting career?
Yeah, so I'm Otty, obviously. And I play two sports for the school. I play hockey and I also play cricket, in which I'm in the first team for both the sports. For hockey, I'm actually the first team captain as of this year. And for cricket, I would say I'm a senior player in the team. And I've just got a few questions about general leadership in an elite team, like you were. And I think the answer to my question could be a bit different from a coach and a player perspective. So maybe you can try give both answers because. So my question is, how can you balance high standards in a team with player well-being when you're in an elite team like you were?
Just explain that a bit more. When you say about well-being, what do you mean about well-being?
Well, keeping the team motivated, keeping the team like interconnected, so there's no bad blood on the pitch and even off the pitch kind of thing. Like how your teammates interact with each other, how they interact with your coach, how they interact in that kind of sense.
I think one of my favourite sayings, your great teams made of great individuals. And what I mean by that is, as a coach, if I was coaching you from a cricket point of view or a hockey point of view, I want to coach the team, but I'd always move that to one side. My number one job is to make you a better player. So if I announce to Archie, I'm going to make you a better hockey player, a better cricket player, which is quite challenging as a coach.
Mm.
I think coaching the team is quite easy. Coaching individuals is quite hard.
Yeah.
But if you get every individual, think of all your teammates in your two sports. If you know every individual is really, you know, trying to improve themselves on an individual basis, and me as your coach are leading it, the team will always take care of itself. I think where you have sometimes kind of issues with teams is if some people are really working hard and you know deep down that these people are not working that hard and you want to be successful.
Mm.
You know, you all want to be successful for Wellington College. You want to win. But the most important thing above that is make sure every individual is really going to the nth degree to become a better player. And that's how I work at it. So, some people are surprised when I say, because I'm probably best known for coaching teams of people. But the secret to coaching a team is if you get every individual working at their optimal level, the teamwork almost takes care of itself. And you can't hide, you know, in the dressing room, who's doing it, who's not doing it.
Mm.
And if everyone's doing it, it's fantastic. That's the real team can come through. If you find one or two people taking shortcuts, then I think that can cause some issues. So the well-being side to me is just making sure and everyone's different. So, you got Otty with yourself, but what I do with you may be very different from one of your colleagues, which is fine, because that's why it's the individual. I'm going to find out what I've got to do to improve you. And that may be very, very different than your colleague. It's understanding what are you doing. But it's looking around the change room and knowing every single player is really really trying to take their skill level to a whole new level, then it becomes a great opportunity, and you tend to win.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then how do you balance that with then, how do you make sure that those people who have their individual goals don't just, in a team sport, like go on themselves? How do you connect them with the rest of the team if you don't want them to play basically too individually, then how are you going to like...
Sure, no, but I think the number one thing is your actual skill set. I can't think of a single sport where the number one thing is, can you become more skillful? You know, think of just cricket alone, whether you're batting or bowling, how can you really get your skill level to a whole new level? And if you do that, you know, everyone likes it. And so it doesn't matter how good you are at something. My job as a coach is to make you better.
Mm.
So if you're taking, you know, penalty corners in hockey, you know, if you're the person, how do we make you better and better at that? So you really try to do that. And I think then that allows the whole team to really respect it. I mean, I worked with a young player called Johnny Wilkinson. I don't know if you heard this guy, but because you weren't born when he was doing his wonderful thing.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Johnny Wilkinson, he dropped the goal to win us the World Cup. He put hours and hours and hours into just kicking a rugby ball. When I say kicking a rugby ball, you know, kicking a goal, kicking out of hand, drop kicks, hours. And the whole team just respected him for him because he was the hardest worker. So there was no issues. And he set the standards. He set the standards. And Johnny can become the world's best kicker at the football.
Mm.
If I'm playing prop forward, if I'm playing hooker, I'm going to become the best prop forward, the best hooker. And then you get respect. So when you don't put that work in, then that's what causes problems within teams of people. So my job as a coach is to make sure every individual is really putting it in. And if you create a team where you look around the change room, you know everyone's doing it, wow, it's a great place to be. Where you have problems as a coach and you hear about losing the dressing room at times, if one or two players are not putting it in, the rest of the team knows this, and it kicks off at times.
Mm.
And that's what can cause problems. But, you know, as I say, great teams are made of great individuals. I like the individuals. So people often say to me, well, come on, team sport's different than individual sport. It's not. If I'm coaching a swimmer or a golfer, it's no different coaching a rugby player. Because number one, I'm trying to make you individually a better player. And if you do that, the team stuff becomes really quite exciting. Because you know you've got players around, you've got the skills to do whatever you're trying to do.
And you trust each other then as well.
And you trust each other. But that's why team sports are great. But I think golf's a team sport. I think swimming's a team sport because you're working with your colleagues that are also swimmers and golfers. And once you know they're really putting it in, you do trust them. And in the actual team games, where like hockey and cricket, you know, you look around, I do trust you. Yes, we'll make mistakes, but you know everyone's doing it. They're putting the hard yards behind the actual
scenes.
With
good intention as well.
Totally good intention. And I'm trying to make, but you see from a coaching point of view, I'm trying to make you a better player.
Yeah.
And doing the teamwork, running a team session out there, I could do it now. I could go out there and take the Wellington College first team at hockey, say. I can run a team session, very, very straightforward. But to make that individual player a better hockey player, that's quite challenging as a coach. But that's why you want challenges as a coach. That's why coaches are, you know, making individual players better. You often hear professional footballer that, you know, you go to a certain club, you go to Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, you go there because that player's become a better player since you went to Chelsea. That's what I would hear as a coach. That's what I'd love to hear, that I've been responsible for making you a better player. But you make me a better player. The team stuff takes care of itself.
Great questions, Ottie. And now segueing through to Sam, who's going to be concentrating on 2003 in particular.
So I'm Sam.
And just tell us, Sam, just about your own sporting career at Wellington.
At Wellington, so I play two sports as well as Ottie. I'm in the first 15 for rugby and the first 11 for cricket. And my question's going to be based on leadership throughout the 2003 World Cup, and specifically who were the best leaders, and as a coach, how do you bring that leadership of these players, the traits that they show, how do you bring that to influence the whole team throughout a competitive environment such as a World Cup?
Great question. So what position do you play, Sam?
I'm fly off,
okay. The key position, Johnny Wilkinson. You're the Johnny Wilkinson.
And by the way, the Wellington first are currently second, but maybe first at the in the National League of school rugby at the moment.
Okay. So just repeat the question again in terms of just how you know about me again?
So which specific players show the best leadership?
What I did, Sam, and I think I was quite unique, and this definitely came probably from my business background. What I did was look at the 15 rugby players. I think every single player's got a leadership role. So there's a leadership role in terms of just how you operate, back to Otty's point about great teams and very great individuals. I think a leadership point is make sure I'm going to deliver. I'm going to make sure I do my part. So individually, you take that on. In terms of the actual game itself, what I did was divided the whole game into various leadership sessions. And I'll ask you a question. So when you got a restart, so someone's kicking off to you, who do you think should be in charge of that? So you've scored a try, converted the try, your opposition are kicking off. What happens then?
I mean, it's surely it's on the responsibility of where the ball is kicked.
Yeah.
And who takes control of the situation.
Okay. So what I do, it's a good answer, it's close. What I'm saying, they're kicking off. I have three people in charge. The two wingers and the fullback. So normally they kick off somewhere around where one winger, so you've got two wingers outside the pitch and the fullback.
Yeah.
So the moment we've scored a try, we know it's going to be a kickoff. So those three players now come into the full. They've got to get everyone in the position quickly. So we've got to win the restarts. So the two wingers and the fullback are now literally shouting every single play. Get in position, get everyone right for the restart. Because what happens sometimes, you just forget it. So in the pit and during the game, they're in charge. But in training, they do the restarts. I get two wingers and a fullback. You think, well, they wouldn't normally be in charge of the restart. Well, they are. Because then on the pitch, the moment we score a try, they've got to kick in. They now know we've got to win that restart. I've seen so many games of rugby lost on a restart because you don't win the restart. So I don't put it in charge of any one person. It's just, and what I do is every part of the game, a player's got a leadership role to play. You know, we've got scrums, you've got line-outs, you've got rucks, you've got speaking to the referee. All 15 players got leadership roles to play in the actual game. So there's obviously one overall leader in terms of the captain, but sometimes you think the captain knows how to delegate all these areas. And we have, you know, stats and data on all those leadership from the restarts to scrums to line-outs. We have data. And when we do our review after the game, you know, I'm looking around the team, like, what happened? So I'm not just talking to the captain, I'm talking to every single person. So I broke the game down. It's easy to do, but you're in charge of leadership on that. And so when I say leadership, it's not just during the game. It's how we train, how we think about it, what we do, come up with new thoughts and new ideas. I want you coming to me, Sam, and saying, well, have we thought about this in terms of, you know, a free kick? You've really got an indirect free kick. What are we going to do? Because, again, you see a lot of teams on the pitch having big debates about it. It should be to bang, one word, that's what we're going to do. But someone's in charge of that. Someone's going to make a decision in that leadership. So to answer your question, leadership is a key role. But if you can get every player having a leadership role for themselves in terms of making sure they're doing the right things individually, great teams make great individuals, but also what's their role within the team to make sure we do really well at every single facet of that game. And there's no part of rugby that hasn't got leadership on top of it. Then you're developing players. So I think every player's got a leadership role to play, individually and a collective team thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. That's
what I mean. Yeah, has anyone spoke to you like that before about leadership?
No, it's very different.
Yeah. So take a free kick. I don't want a big debate. I want one person saying, okay, I'm in charge of free kick. Not the captain, because he's got the roles right. You got a free kick. I'm in charge of free kicks. I'm looking at scoreboard. I'm looking at the whole thing. I've got to make sure there's a decision. One thing, we'll call this Sam's. The word Sam, we know what we're going to do. It could be tap and go quickly. It could be various bits and pieces. But you make the decision and all the team look at you. That's our person who's in charge of free kicks and leadership. And you make the decision. You live or die by that decision. Then afterwards, we'll have a chat whether it was a good decision or not.
Yeah.
But you'll talk about it, lead on it, think about new ways of doing things. And when you think of a free kick in rugby, there's so much opportunity there to score. Because you've got the ball, you can do all sorts of really different things to get the ball into space, and it's a great opportunity. But I want one person making that call and going, "Yeah, that worked really well."
Nice,
Sam. Anything else on that?
No, I think that's all. I was just, it's interesting how you see the captain as an overall leader, but you try bring the most out of each and every individual to kind of contribute to the team leadership as a whole.
The biggest role of the captain is really in training, 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
All the training, make sure every individual is doing. That's what these guy or the lady who sets the example, they're your role model, they're the person, look what he or she's doing. The leadership on the field of play, you know, he's looking at all the, you know, you break the leadership down into all the actual players. I think overall, and then his number one role in leadership is really just making the really big calls. You know,
yeah.
Do we kick a goal? Do we go for the touch? Do we tap and go? But those he's now working with his other player who's in charge of free kicks to make the right decision, and that's what we have to do.
Yeah. Amazing.
And on that Wilkinson drop goal, did you know he would, did you instinctively know he was going to do it?
Well, Anthony, it wasn't instinctive. We would have practiced that a million times.
No. But he would have. Did you sense that that was the moment coming up, that, that this was getting? What were you feeling at that moment?
There wasn't a sense. We'd obviously drawn the game. We're going into injury time. About a minute to play. We have a line out. So the first 40, you got to win the line out. So the leader's got to call the right. We don't win the white line out. We don't win the World Cup. But I know once we win the ball, we score three. We're going to get dropped. We're going to try and get the ball in position where we can drop a goal. So we win the line-out ball. We had a call called zigzag. Mm. And zigzags, basically, you win the ball, you punch right, punch left. You don't go wide. Yeah. Mindset, we're trying to score into the post. So we're just punching, trying to get under the post. And Wilkinson's getting in place to do it. And honestly, we would have practiced that in restaurants. We'd have stopped. I'd have stopped the meal. We'd just walked through the whole routine of our drop goals. We had granny and grandma being lifted in the line-outs in the corner. In the restaurants, and we just walk it through. So you just walk it through. So Johnny Wilkinson's the hero because he dropped the goal to win the World Cup. But I look at all 14 other players, they've all got roles to play.
Yeah.
One player does something wrong, hits the ruck wrong, get a penalty against us, we don't win the World Cup. So that's when you need real leadership individually. I know what I'm doing, I can do this. You know, and I'll never name these players, it was one or two players who I really didn't trust under real pressure to make the right decisions. No matter how talented they were, they couldn't stay in the actual team. So I needed players who I could really trust under pressure to make the right decision, think correctly, and not do anything stupid in that biggest game. And that's what we did, and that's why we won the World Cup.
Yeah, perfect.
And Sam, if you had to focus on cricket or rugby, which would it be after Wellington?
It's a great question.
What's your heart?
To be honest, it's still up in the air. But after this season, I'm leaning towards rugby. It's been a great year. So I think, yeah.
And how good a season's it been?
It's been amazing. So we won the St. Joseph's Festival over half term, which was massive, and then beat Sedba only a couple of weeks ago, which is our
kind of biggest game.
Oh, it's pure elation. I mean, it's the best feeling.
What was the score?
It was 2017.
Oh, so well, it was a good game,
tight one. Yeah.
And on to Sophia, and again, just Sophia, tell us about your own sporting life at Wellington.
So hi, I'm Sophia and I'm in the first team for netball at school, and my question is more about like coaching and what a coach can do to like inspire a team. So what do you think the most important thing is as a coach to inspire like young athletes to realize that like they can become like the best version of themselves? Because obviously some athletes really struggle with like believing in themselves and actually like knowing that like what they do is like amazing. So what can you do and what do you do as a coach to allow them to like reach their full potential?
Yeah, great question. Just first one, netball. We played a lot of netball in the rugby team. I think because I learned that, no, seriously, Loughborough, the ladies team at Loughborough was a really top netball team. It was obviously a sports university. So, yeah, we used to play a lot of netball. I think it's a great sport in terms of movement and everything. So there's a rugby team. We did a lot of netball in our warm-up drills all around netball and things like that. In terms of your question about, just the key point about the individual.
Yeah, so, like, how do you as a coach inspire an athlete to realise that they can, like, sure, become the best version of themselves?
I think the number one thing as a coach, when I was always conscious of, I think, it was a bit like teachers here, in school. Why is that person a good teacher? And it's normally because what I found, looking back even to my days at school, that you enjoyed that class. You enjoyed being coached by that person, whether it's maths, English, history, whatever. So I think from a sporting point of view as a coach, your number one thing, as always, can you make sure that individual, that team of people, are enjoying what you're actually doing? I think if you get enjoyment out of it, you can go a long way. So it sounds quite a glib kind of word, enjoyment. What do you mean by enjoyment? And enjoyment to me was putting everything possibly, all your energy into trying to get better at what you're actually trying to do. And I always said, you know, I want you doing well in the classroom. I want you doing well on the sports field. But you've got to put the hard work in. So your job as a coach is to make sure that hard work is enjoyable. Because sometimes it is tough, especially if you're doing sort of gym sessions or aerobic running sessions. It can be quite tough, but you're trying to be better, but also just trying to see this improvement. Can you actually measure this improvement? And I see nothing wrong with measurement, even if it's just a subjective measurement where I think you're 7 out of 10 doing this, I've got to get you to 8, you know, and how are we going to do that? And I think then the more you can get people like yourself really kind of involved in that sport. I mean, and really understanding it. So I'd need you to almost become a coach yourself. So if you can explain to me what you're doing, why you're doing it, I think that's a better way of improving. And what I'm always very, very keen for is hearing, what do you think? What else should we be doing? And as I said, I was lucky enough to work at a high level in rugby and the Olympics. The Olympics was amazing, especially London 2012. So I worked with all the Olympic teams, which are 26 teams. So you worked with, amazing athletes, Rebecca Adlington and Chris Hoy and Sir Ben Ainsley. And they were no different than rugby players. Their DNA was the same. They were what I call sponges, not rocks. In other words, they had a sponge between their ears, not a rock between their ears. What I mean by that, they were always come back saying, what about this? What about this? So in a real nice way, questioning, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we push? Then your job as a coach is to say sometimes, yes, we can go. We can do that. We can push further. Or sometimes you say, no, that's gone too far. But you've got to get real involvement. You know, being a player and a coach, I want you to come back to me. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? So I need you studying what you're trying to do. But always back to the individual basis. I'm trying to make you a better netball player. How are we going to do that? And if you do that, people enjoy it. And I think you'll get it. You know, I think people will look at you as a coach and say, okay, he or she has delivered as a coach. And I think if you do that to a player, you'll get it back in bucket loads and bucket loads. Then the team sort of takes care of itself. Then the teamwork becomes quite fun to do. But it really is around enjoyment. You as a coach, you want to make sure every session is let's say fun. People want to work hard. They want to get better. And if you see improvement, people will enjoy it.
Thank you.
What do you think, Sophia, your best coaches all the way through your sporting life have given you?
What's that quality? When they're able to create a relationship with you where you know that they like believe in you and like believe that you can like continue to get better, because it's so hard when you're in like a competitive environment where you feel almost like your coach doesn't believe you, like doesn't really care. And like that as a player is quite hard to then believe in yourself and to like keep going. So I think like the best coaches have been the coaches that like make the effort, go the extra mile to create that relationship with you in the first place, to make you feel valued and every like player feel valued on the team. And then like having that relationship to be able to tell you like when you've done something wrong, what you can do better, and like support you like through your journey.
Yeah. I agree totally. And all I'd say is I want this to be a two-way process. I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to make you better at what you're going to do. But I've got to know it's coming two ways as well. I do want you coming back and questioning me in a nice way. Are you sure about this? Or what about this? What about that? If you get that two-way process going, I think anything is possible. And that's what I look for in an athlete. And I've never met, I've been lucky enough to work with some of the world's best athletes. And they are sponges. Sometimes they're tough to deal with because they are questioning. They want to go better and better and better. Sometimes you've got to hold them back. Sometimes you've got to push them forward. But they'll know whether you're delivering. I can't pull the wool over your eyes, Sophie, I promise you. If I don't deliver to you, you'll know, and I won't get the best out of you. If you know, wow, this coach has really delivered for me. And that applies, and as I say, I'm a teacher, really. Teaching's coaching, coaching's teaching. It's the same skill set. You got to know your subject. But the number one thing, can you make sure that you, Sophie, do you enjoy your time with me, working with the team? But you know I'm putting it in. I'm not kind of trying to pull the wool out of your eyes. I'm really actually coming up with new thoughts and new ideas. But it's got to be a partnership. I need you studying your sport as well. What about this? What about that? And there's not a sport I can think of where we can't go to a whole new level in terms of what we're trying to do. But it's got to be a two-way process and not just one way. If it's one way, sometimes you get it wrong. If it's a two-way process and you've got an open dialogue and you do trust each other, anything's possible.
Highlights here for the season that you've had, what would it be? Particular match?
Oh, that's a tough one. So we won counties just before half term. So we have regionals.
Tell us about winning county. Who was that against? And what?
It was amazing. It's a long day of like matches. So I think we played 9 games, which is quite a lot. And counties is quite a range of like abilities. So I think for us, it was just showing up to each game and like playing to our standard, no matter like who we were playing. And obviously, we were lucky enough to come out with a win. And then actually on Thursday we're going into the third round of the Sisters in Sport Cup, so it's like a knockout round, and we're playing St Swithin's at home, which I think is going to be quite a tough game, so yeah, this week's just been preparing for that, so hopefully that comes out positively.
And any tip for the team, Clive?
for the big game?
Yeah.
It's back to what I think was Sam's point about pressure and leadership. You know, are you really looking forward to this? Have we got all the bases covered? Have we got everything done? You know, saying to your team, is there anything we've not covered? Are we all ready to go? And listening as a coach, but also as a player. You know, if you don't think you're quite right in a team meeting, in a nice positive way, discuss this with the coach. Can we do a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that? You know, I am a believer that whatever age when I'm coaching people your age, I'm coaching, you know, real adults. You know, I want to hear from you. And if we go around the road, are we okay? Are we okay? Especially when you break the game down into different areas. I can look at Sam and say, Sam, are we okay with our restarts? Are we in place? And Sophie, are we okay with our free kicks from netball, whether they're there? Can we do that or not? And so it's just get everyone really, really involved. And let's go out and play. Let's go out and really not leave anything back here in the coaching room. Let's go out and really do it on the field of play.
And good luck. And that was brilliant, Sophia. And now we're going to be hearing from Elijah and Zach. So, Elijah, before you ask Clive questions, just summarise your own sporting career at Wellington.
Hi, I'm Elijah. I play for Wellington College First 15. I play number 12 and I'm the vice-captain. I'm also part of Northampton Saints Under 18 Academy. Play on the wing there and hopefully got some good games leading into Christmas, through to February, and play some Academy League games there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward
to it. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow.
And my question is, do you think with the current form of the England team today that they can go and win the World Cup in the next 2 years?
Wow, good question. I think they're in a... can England win the World Cup in 2 years' time? Have you seen the draw today? Did you see the draw?
Yeah, my dad sent it to me, but I haven't.
Yeah,
I haven't,
so they're England, yet. England in the same group as Wales, so that's going to be quite fascinating.
That, yeah, that is quite
funny. I think, I'm a big fan of Steve Borthwick. We go back a long way. My first captain when I was coach of England, I captained when he was 21, 22. And I think he's come in and I think he started off quite slowly and quite conservatively. I think he's grown into the job.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one thing, what he's been really, I think the number one skill as a head coach, outside of coaching the team, but the number one skill is choosing the right players. And that sounds blindly obvious, but it's amazing how good a coach you become if you've got some great players, but also you actually pick them in the right positions. So I think he's got a really good team of players building up now. And I think the last few games over the autumn have been showing England in a good place. But you need good players, and he's got some good players, but he's starting to really pick them. And I think, you know, there's no doubt South Africa, the number one team in the world at the moment, but we're still 2 years away from the World Cup. And I think England are moving very fast, and they'd be 11 out of 11.
Yeah.
And, I think also interesting, Elijah, in terms of even since we won the World Cup in 2003, we've never replaced 12 and 13. Our centres were Will Greenwood and Mike Tindall. I just think this time now we've got a couple of players. Really, I was really impressed with Jeremy at the weekend playing your position.
Yeah.
I think he's an inside centre.
Yeah.
So for the first time, I suddenly see some real good players in the 12, 13 position.
Yeah.
We've not had those for 20 odd years. Yeah. So suddenly, I think we've got good players in every single position. And you know, as a coach, you get quite excited about that. So I think we've got some really good centres. I would play Freeman in the outside centre. I think a German Freeman at 12, 13 would be quite amazing.
Yeah.
So we got some great players, and it's amazing how good a coach you become if you've got some good players. I think we're in a really good position. And I think the rest of the rugby world will be looking at England quite seriously for the first time in a long time. In saying that, the World Cup is down in Australia.
Yeah.
I think Australia would be very, very strong, despite the fact they're down the rankings at the moment. They're in the same group as New Zealand. So England are playing Wales, Australia will be playing New Zealand in the pool game.
Yeah.
So that's going to be quite fascinating. Yeah. So you've got to go down to some headstone and win. That's why I think, you know, England winning in 2003, despite the fact we were ranked number one team in the world, we're favourites, to go and actually win in Australia against Australia was a really amazing feat. But I think in a couple of years' time, the South Africa are going to be there, the Kiwis. It's going to be a great World Cup because there's five or six teams can win it.
Yeah.
But England a great place. I think Borthwick's done a great job based on selection. But I think especially at 12 and 13, he's got some players now who really are good enough to be in a World Cup winning team.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Thank you.
Go on that. Anything about how we get there and Six Nations coming up?
So obviously they've got such high expectations at the moment. And you just said the 2003 team were number one in the world. And England now are number three. What do you think? How do you reckon you cope with that pressure with being such in the top five world rankings? And obviously, you guys were the top one team in the world. How do you reckon they cope with that pressure the best?
I think I was always very clear, but I think pressure is great.
Yeah.
I think it's a word that's used a lot. I mean, there's pressure, you know, being charged with school, being the head of school, which Anthony's been. The pressure's everywhere. If pressure is good, you can't say there's going to be no pressure in this game. A World Cup final, so pressure, that's why you do it. So I think pressure is absolutely good. And also, I was always very, very keen to get to the World Cup and be number one ranked team in the world.
Yeah.
And quite simply, I've heard people say, well, you're best being the underdogs. No. Favourites tend to win.
Yeah.
So if you're favourites, you tend to win games of rugby. So I want to be favourites. I want to be number one ranked team in the world. And that's what England got to try and do the next couple of years. Can we... our next big game outside of Six Nations is we play South Africa in Johannesburg, and not Johannesburg, and in Port Elizabeth in next June. That'd be a massive game. But if you're going to win down there, we should go to the World Cup as number one ranked team, because the favourites tend to actually win. So that's what I'd be saying to the team. Let's build the pressure up. Great players play under pressure.
Yeah.
You don't know Elijah too well, but when you're playing the big game against Zebra, how are you feeling? Yes, the pressure's there. You've got to win this game.
Yeah.
That's something you should. That's why you do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to play against a Mickey Mouse team. I want to play against Zebra, a team we know we can win. We know we can lose to.
Yeah.
That's pressure. And then as a coach, I'm looking then the players that thrive under this. That really better walk out, you know, shoulders back. This is what I was born to do. This is what I want to do. I'm really going to enjoy this. And which of the players who actually feel real cranky? You know, this is, that's beautiful. Yeah. The pressure is good. And what is stress? Stress is something we're out of control of. Pressure is something you're in control of. We know we're playing Zebra. I know who I'm playing against. I know what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to prove. I'm going to show everyone watching this game. And it's time to kind of almost show off in many ways. I want to show everyone how good I am.
Yeah.
You get all 15 players playing like this and say, I want to show everyone how good I am. That's a wonderful thing to be involved in. And then I think that's where you've clearly achieved it.
Especially. Thank you.
Biggest match for you in the first so far this season?
Yeah.
What was it?
I'd say definitely the Zebra game and probably the St. Joe's final. Those two kind of come hand in hand, I'd say. Zebra, we were down at halftime 17-8 and managed to bring it back and win 20-17.
So, how did you do that?
I'd say our coaches have been saying that our defence is the best defence in the country at schoolboy level. So we managed to keep them out for the whole of the second half and managed to put our points away. We did miss quite a few opportunities. But we did manage to bring the win home.
I'm putting you under pressure, Elijah. Who's going to win the Six Nations in the spring? And then Clive will give his commentary on you.
He's good under pressure, so he's not panicking.
I think with DuPont coming back into the French setup, I think it's going to be between France and England. I don't think, personally, Ireland didn't look that strong in the autumn, so I don't think they're going to bring that much. So it's going to be between England and France, and I think England might just take it. I want England to win.
Obviously, we want England to win. I just think it's going to be a great Six Nations. I think the awkward game for England is Scotland away.
Yeah, that's true.
We just don't seem to play well up there. And they're in a big corner. But also, they got a good team.
Yeah,
look at that Scotland team. You go, wow, that's a good team. And they shouldn't have lost to the All Blacks. They shouldn't have lost to the Fraternity team. And they'll be hurting. They've got England at Murrayfield. Yeah. So that's going to be a huge, huge game. If there's going to be an upset, I think that's where the upset might be.
Yeah.
But outside of that, if it goes according to plan, it's England v France in Paris. That's the big game.
Yeah.
I just think Scotland have got a really good side and they're hurting. And I think I think England have got to beat Scotland, and I'm not sure they will.
And Clive had a famous, as he was saying, match at Murrayfield against Scotland, in which he was playing. Zach, just take the questions forward and just begin just telling Clive about your own sporting career.
Hi, I'm Zach. I've been at Wellington's third form. I had the pleasure of being part of the Bath and the London Irish setup throughout my time, and I'm currently in the first 15 playing in the back row. It's been a great season for us so far, as has been said.
Ambitions?
Ambitions is to go on and play Bucks rugby at university. I think a lot of the boys in the group are kind of really looking to do that. So, looking at universities, it's getting very exciting now. So, that's very cool.
Okay.
So my question is, obviously, we are very lucky to be at a school like this where the rugby is really good. But how do you think like the RFU and like the Vereing, like rugby kind of foundations can improve participation for everyone like playing rugby to make it like a sport that's more accessible for everyone so we get more people playing it?
Yeah, good question, because rugby is, it's in a kind of, I think just recently it's proved how popular it is. The recent internationals, the viewing figures have been amazing. Not only people going to the games on TV. So I think in that respect, the international game's in a good place. I think in terms of participation, there's been a lot of talk around, you know, injuries and head injuries especially. So, but to me, as always, when I was in, so I worked at the RFU for 8, 9 years, the key thing is this Sunday morning, the mini rugby sessions.
Yeah.
I think the RFU have got to invest far more in what I call youth development officers. And these are kind of full-time coaches, probably straight out of university, who go around to rugby clubs, not just schools, but to rugby clubs, and really show your mums and dads almost how to coach the game.
Yeah.
So when I say Sunday mornings, these are young people, you know, between sort of the mini rugby age, between say nine and 11, to really go to the rugby clubs, teach parents how to coach the game properly, because most of the coaching at that level is done by mums and dads and parents.
Yeah.
And you got to make it fun. It's got to be enjoyable. It's got something someone's really got to look forward to.
Mm.
And it's a competitive environment. A lot of football clubs, golf clubs are all really trying to get young players to go there. So the big thing is these youth development officers. And there should be, I think, at least 20, 25 full-time youth development officers. Their job is to go around and teach rugby to not only coaches, but also parents and teachers how to coach it properly. And the thing is enjoyable. I think sport should be enjoyable at every age, right up to my age. You've got to enjoy what sport. I still play. So I love playing golf because I enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
But I think as a coach, you've got to absolutely make sure it's enjoyable. And rugby has got to be coached properly at that age. It's got to be safe. And if mums and dads think it's safe at that age, the kids will go. And I think the girls and the ladies' teams have done a fantastic job in that as well. So it is for boys and girls now.
Yeah.
And that is a really big step forward that the RFU or World Rugby's taken. But it's not as easy as making it sound. But I think youth development officers are absolutely key. Full-time jobs, going around schools, even to Wellington where there's good coaches, to really work with the coaches to make sure it's being taught properly, safely, but also make sure enjoyment is top of the list.
All right, yeah, brilliant, thank you. Yeah, I was just going to kind of ask what you thought on, because, I mean, a lot of us used to play kind of club rugby growing up, and then as you grow up, you start playing on the Saturday, and it's very difficult to kind of play on the Sunday. So, like, how do you see that balance changing? Do you see club rugby kind of becoming a thing that you only do when you're younger, and then as you get older, a lot of people kind of move off to schools? Or how would you kind of tackle that? Would you aim to increase participation for older people? It's like 17, 18-year-olds at club rugby.
All I'd say with that, and I'm quite adamant about this, I mean, first of all, you can only play one game on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, to try and play two, which I see a lot of kids do, you know, to your age and younger, and I think that's crazy. I still think you can play Saturday for Wellington and potentially go to a club on the Sunday, but you're just doing skills. You're not playing. There'll be no contact. You're just going there to have some fun and improve your skill. When I say improve your skills, and I really do mean improve your skills, I've been lucky enough to work with Olympic sports. When you see some of the training that, say, a gymnast would do, you could do that, Zach. I promise you, there's so much stuff you could do from a athletics point of view, from a gymnastics point of view, to make you a better back row player, to make you quicker, to make you more agile, to make you more, you know, just to make you stronger and fitter. But look at other sports as well, and that's going to be done at the weekend. But it's just so important that it becomes enjoyable.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there is this kind of, and it shouldn't be a conflict. To me, as you know, if you're in a school like Wellington, you're number one on a Saturday, you play for Wellington. I've got no qualms about that. But if you are involved with a local club, the Elijah before was saying, which club were you involved with? Northampton. You want to go to Northampton Academy, but you can't play for them. There should be no contact. You go and just do skills. And I really do mean skills, really work. We use all sorts of different sized balls and all sorts of stuff you can actually do. How can you improve your skill level? We can be measured. So you know. And if every single, so one big step, English rugby, world rugby can still take forward. All 15 players are really, really skillful. From your prop forward to your fullback, if you've got skill level with the ball in hand in terms of how you pass, how you move the ball, that takes you to a whole new level. I don't think we're anywhere near the level we should be in terms of our ability to catch and pass the ball and to do all sorts of really wonderful things, which other sports have gone to. So rugby can do a lot, but I still come back to youth development officers. And I think they're such a huge, huge role to play in making sure rugby's taught and coached properly.
All right, great.
And Zach, who's your tip for who's going to win the Six Nations?
Oh, the Six Nations. I think I could confidently say I reckon England are going to win. Okay. I think their depth has kind of improved a little bit, and I think they're on good form at the moment. And by the looks of it, they've got a lot of confidence after kind of beating the All Blacks. So
yeah.
I'd be quite confident.
And the greatest single player in any team?
Oh, who's like my goat? Who I think the best player ever was? Or English rugby team? I think, Johnny Wilkinson's like the very easy one. But
You obviously never saw me play then.
Yeah.
You can see it in black and white and somewhere on YouTube. And so in the Six Nations and any country, who is the standout player do you think going to be?
Well, I think the return of Antoine Dupont will be really interesting to see. How he like kind of operates the French team.
What's so special about Dupont?
I think the fact that he could probably be the best player on the pitch in quite a few of the positions along the back line is what makes him quite good. Like, he could play 10, he could probably play in the centres. He kind of commands the game very well, which for some nines, their kind of role is a distributor. But Antoine Dupont really kind of takes control of the game, and he's kind of got that X factor to him, which means that he sucks in a lot of players, which means the other French players have the space and kind of ability to shine.
Have you got any views about playing sevens?
I love sevens. We've got our seven seasons coming up, and I think him playing sevens was probably the best thing.
Because Anthony Dupont playing in the Olympics at sevens for France was the game changer of the whole Olympics.
Yeah.
It took France to a whole new level, the whole country to a whole new level.
Yeah.
To have him playing sevens, and I think sevens is such a great game. And I think one thing that we don't do very well at all, we should be far.
Why doesn't England play at sevens?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The reason it kind of doesn't, it kind of falls apart, because in the Olympics you've got to go as Team GB, so yeah. you can't put an English team in.
Yeah.
So you've got to pick teams from Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and we've just never been able to do that properly. But it's developing the game to see Team GB really compete at Olympics is crazy, not just for men and women especially. And also when you're back with kids on a Sunday morning, get them playing sevens, touch rugby sevens, not 15s, touch rugby sevens, where it's all skill, all running, no contact, just touch, put the ball between legs and play quickly. So it's such a great game, and we no one's been able to take that mantle on it. It's a big skill acquisition area for young people playing seven side as opposed to 15s. No contact, just touch, put between legs and play quickly. And that's great fun.
One of your predecessors, Elijah and Zach, called Matty Hughes, was captain of America's sevens team, US sevens team, for a long time. Did it make Dupont a better player, Clive?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I play seven. I was enough to win the Hong Kong sevens with the Barbarians all those years ago. I love sevens. It just teaches you, well, you can't hide in sevens. You've got to be a great passer, you've got to be a great runner, you've got to be able to beat people. So I think Dupont became a far better player just by playing sevens. And to be able to switch from sevens to 15 so easy shows it can be done. And Zach's absolutely right. You know, Dupont coming back into the French team is the kind of the big game changer for the whole of France, they want to see him back in the team.
And Clive, is he, I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, the greatest player of all time. Was he really, you know, will he in 50 years' time be considered one of the greats?
I mean, it's always difficult to different eras. Certainly in the current era, yes. In the current clock trucker players worldwide, he'd get into any team in the world with ease. And also, he seems to be a great captain. You know, he captains a team. And he's not a one-man show, but there's certainly a better team when he's in the team.
And brilliant questions there, Zach and Elijah. And last question for Clive. When you are having your... in your dotage, you look back at one rugby game that you played in or coached or just maybe watched, what would it be?
I mean, the obvious one for me is obviously the World Cup final.
Not allowing you that.
Doesn't get much better than that. There was a game which people might not even know about. But I'd been coaching about a year, and England went to South Africa and we played in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It was in Bloemfontein. Now, Bloemfontein, I promise you've never been there, is a tough part of town. I mean, South Africa's a pretty tough place to go anyway, but you go to Bloemfontein, which is a real Afrikaans, sort of hop up there. We went there and won. And that was when, for the first time, I've looked at this team and gone, wow, if we can come to Bloemfontein and win with this team, it was a big tick for me as a coach, big tick for them as a player. We never looked back from that game.
And the standout players in the team?
Oh, it was the players, you know. Wilkinson, obviously, was there as a standout player. Delalio, especially, Martin Johnson. They just all came of age in that game because, you know, England had gone to South Africa and won. But we didn't just win in Johannesburg, we won in Bloemfontein, which is the toughest place I've ever been to. And to actually go and... There's certain towns in... When you know rugby, you know, it's going to Dunedin in New Zealand. You know, playing Auckland's great. If you want to go and really test yourself, go to Dunedin, which is tough. Go to Bloemfontein. You know, go to these places. And that's where I think, from the England point of view, it's one thing playing at Twickenham. Can you go away from home and winning these places? So we went to Bloemfontein and won that game. And that was a game I'll never forget. Because it was sitting afterwards, just having a quiet cup of tea after the game and thinking, wow, okay, we have got a good team here. We have got a good coaching team. We can do something special. And we kind of kicked on from there and won the World Cup about a couple of years later.
Amazing. So, Otty and Sam and Sophia, Zach and Elijah, thank you very much indeed. Brilliant questions. And above all, Sir Clive, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.